Hello and welcome to the Moonshots Podcast. It's episode 253. I'm your co-host, Mike Parsons, and as always, I'm joined by the man himself, Mr. Mark Pearson Freeland. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Good morning, listeners, subscribers, viewers, every single person who's out there tuning in just to learn something a little bit more today and joining us to learn out loud with us here on the Moonshots Podcast.
Yes, for a new series nonetheless, Mark.
Oh, Mike, you've already launched straight in. I like it. Let's not beat around the bush or bury the lead any further. Today, listeners and subscribers, we are digging into a brand new series. This time, Mike, and this is a little bit of a confession for us, isn't it? Our first series that we're going to do on Mr. Seth Godin. Seth Godin being, I guess, Mike, a personification of good marketing. That's one way to really distill down a lot of his career. He really provides quite an accessible and clear-cut way of really thinking about the way that we interact with and approach work that we've got within the marketing space and beyond, doesn't he?
He not only has some great thoughts on marketing and telling your story, which is very much of the moment and breaking free of the industrial age, if you will. What's really nice is he goes on into some of the books that we're going to cover to talk about personal productivity. So he's got like this great capacity to go from marketing right over into sort of a Cal Newport kind of a territory. Mm. So if you're somebody who is working on a product or a service and wants to share it with the world, we have got ideas not only in this series, but this very episode, Mark, which will help you understand it's a new reality in the way that we market our products and services. And it has a whole bunch of habits that we can break down, we can learn out loud together. So I'm dying to dig into the universe of what in fact is marketing from Seth Godin. So Mark, lead the way. Where shall we begin this adventure?
Well, kicking off this adventure with Seth Godin that we're going to dive in to a number of his books over the next few episodes of the Moonshots Podcast. Today, Mike, we're going to be kicking off with a great insight that gets us straight into the heart of what is the value of marketing and actually, what is marketing today?
Marketing used to be a side effect. We had a factory. It was busy. We said to the marketing team, here's some money. Go sell average stuff to average people. Not true anymore. Marketing is at the core of what we do. That unless you make coal or oil, marketing is the story you tell, who you're telling it to, why people are going to buy it. It's the center of the universe. And what that means is that you're responsible. You're responsible for what you make it, how you bring it to the world, what the side effects are, who you're talking to. Everyone works for you. Because what we know is that a product well marketed is a product that people want to engage in. And an amazing product that no one knows about or cares about isn't amazing because we don't get to use it. So I coined this term modern marketer to identify somebody who isn't beholden to buying mass media, TV ads, to be in front of average people with their average product. That's old school marketing. That's Mad Men. It's faded away. It's almost gone. The idea that you can buy enough gross rating points to interrupt enough people to make enough money to do it again, gone. And so what we're seeing on the internet is a whole bunch of companies tried to simulate TV. They tried to come up with viral stuff. They tried to come up with scams and hypes just to get a lot of eyeballs. It doesn't work. The fact is that TV was a mass medium and the internet is a micro medium. You can't buy Facebook. You can't buy, even buy Yahoo. You can't buy all the ads. It's lots and lots of tiny slices. So pick your slice and measure when you need to measure. Don't measure when measuring doesn't make any sense. And realize that what we are seeking as an asset is connection. Attention, trust, and connection. Not spam or interruption. Simon is brilliant as always. And understanding your why is critical, but it's also usually awfully general. My why is because I need to make a living. My why is because the beach is too full. My why is I want to feel fulfilled by doing this work, which leads to the next question. Well, what am I going to do now? Which is, how do I know if I'm doing a good job? Which is, what is this all for? And so for me, it begins with seeing who we seek to serve and figuring out how to make things better for them. Not for me, but for them. Because if I can make things better for them, then I'll get a chance to do it again. And if I can keep doing it and doing it, making things better, weaving things together, earning trust, turning attention into a promise and that promise into a brand that matters, then regardless of what I do for a living, regardless of what my why is, my practice is a professional one because I'm not leaving behind victims. Instead, I'm opening the door for people to do better. Everything we do as a marketer has an effect.
Ooh, okay, Mark. Now the homework begins. I think, you know, I'll start from one of the final thoughts. And he asked the question, who do you serve as a business, as a marketing person? Very interesting question, because that is the opposite of industrial age marketing, which is who are you targeting? Who are you blasting with your message, right? Mm. And I think if we unpack that, the reason everything is turned upside down in marketing is we've shifted from a few channels on broadcast. So when we all were young, especially the gray hairs like me, we grew up with three or four stations on the television in Australia, the UK, and the US. Today, you know, we don't watch television like we used to. There are millions of channels available to us all the time. So we've gone from this mass to micro that he talked about. So just trying to like blast everyone and everything, it's impossible. You can't reach everyone because they don't want to hear from you. And most importantly, you cannot afford it because there's just too many channels, too many touch points. So you need to kind of pick your niche. And inside of that, ask the question, whom do you wish to serve? Now, I think that what we have to recognize, Mark, is often like this all makes actually really good common sense. But the temptation, let's call ourselves out when we're at work, when we're working on a product or service and we want to launch it to the world, is we're tempted to just like buy some ads, buy some reach, buy some frequency, blast the message out. And I think that we often do that to mask the fact that we're not really sure if it solves a problem. Maybe we don't really have many advocates of said product or service or the existing products or services we have. So I believe that you should have like this self-awareness, thanks to Seth Godin. And I would say that if you don't have any advocacy from your current customers, be you B2B or B2C, if you have no advocacy happening, I would seriously consider not doing marketing.
Yeah.
Now, this is very untraditional because people try and, you know, spend their ad dollars out of a problem, right? But what I'm actually saying here is if you take Seth's thinking, if you're not getting any advocacy, then you're not serving your customer correctly. You're not serving them fully. Because think about this. When we love something, when you love a local cafe, you write a great review. You want to see them do well. Think about a great product that you are using. For example, I have Koyo sneakers and they are phenomenal. And anybody who mentions, because I have several pairs, anyone who mentions my sneakers, I'm like, it's Koyo, handmade, fantastic, and tough as nails, comfortable. They've been all around the world. They're amazing. I'm a lifelong customer. I have different colors of the same shoe that I'm so into them. Now, my point is this. Whatever you're doing, whether it be B2B or B2C, if nobody is referring, recommending your business, your products, or your services, forget about the marketing because you're obviously not doing what Seth has said is key,
no.
Serving someone, solving a problem. And this is going to be a huge theme to this book that we're going to discover. Until you are confident through interaction with your customer that they're like, this really helps me do X, Y, Z in my role, in my life. If you don't hear that, if you don't witness that, if you don't sense and read that, if you cannot get a review to save your life, that's okay. It's a signal that you're not solving the right problem in the right way. And that's where your attention should go. And I think this reorientates us. Don't bring out the big ad dollars and just spray and pray that someone starts buying this and that the world will suddenly have all this momentum around your product or your service. No. Serve someone, and then you can get down to the business of telling that story. I think, Mark, we've all been a little bit guilty of times of the product or service is not quite right, so let's just like advertise our way out of this.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I'm sure there's going to be a handful of listeners that are hearing this episode thinking, hang on, Mike, what are you talking about? Don't tell my boss that you want to do this. Don't cut all the marketing spend just because it's not working. Because you're right, it's not necessarily a truth that I think a lot of us want to hear. And I think this is part of the attractiveness of Seth's work. Not only is it quite, you know, we've only heard one clip, Mike, but already our brains are firing. Not only is it accessible, interesting, but it's also very, very hard-hitting. And I think you're right. This is something that goes quite against probably a lot of the work that I've done within the marketing space for different brands over the years. Because traditionally, in my experience, if there's a marketing budget to use up, hey, we better use it. If we don't have customers, what's the problem? Well, it's probably marketing. You know, marketing is a be-all and end-all catch space, isn't it? You know, if you're not selling enough products or if you're going straight to B2B and you're not getting enough from your consumers, well, what's the problem? It's how we're communicating stuff. We better throw a load more money into the marketing space and figure that out. Or, you know, oh, we're not selling enough products. Let's cut the budget for marketing. Let's bring it right down and we'll come back to it later. These are traditional things that I think we've probably all experienced, Mike. But exactly as you've just said, if we have too many options, you've got too much space on the internet to try and be everywhere. You've got an uncertainty of who you're going to talk to. I think fundamentally, you've also got within marketing space a problem of uncertainty around whether the communications will work.
Yeah. Right? Well, think about it. If you're not sure if the product's working, well, the message that you would want to tell should be rooted in said product. And so if you're not sure of the product, you're definitely not sure of the marketing.
For sure. Absolutely. And suddenly you get yourself into an even deeper hole. And I think this is what happens to a lot of brands.
Yeah.
Maybe brands that we've seen come and go over the last 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
They'll go hell for leather. They'll provide lots of great, exciting, maybe communications, but not really know who to talk to. It's a bit of a spray and pray, you know, throwing pasta on the wall. And suddenly you realize, hey, you didn't speak to anybody because it was too broad.
So what I want to propose is I've got a 5-point checklist of whether you're a modern marketer. Okay, you ready? Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you understand your audience? So are you conducting surveys, interviews? Are you reading their reviews online? Have you even created personas to represent the different types of customers? If you don't have those things, work to do. Okay, here's the next one. Do you focus on the smallest viable market? Have you tailored your product to the smallest niche market that you can find? Okay, that's number two. Have you embraced permission marketing? Meaning, have you got a newsletter that your audience, that your potential customers have opted into and enjoy?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Have you leveraged the power of storytelling? Are you showcasing the impact of your product on real people's lives? Like, this is a big litmus test, right?
That's a good one.
Like, if you're not doing that right now for your company, for your business products or services, well, you better get out there and demonstrate, right?
Mm.
And don't oversell it. Just like, here's Joe. Joe had a problem. He used our product. Let's see how it changed his world, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Get those ambassadors, advocates to kind of do the work for you to a certain extent. I mean, Mike, what I find interesting about each of those, these steps to being a modern marketer, is all of them are embedded around the customer.
They are. Yeah, I got two more.
You've got two more.
Yeah.
This is how excited I got, Mike. I've jumped the gun.
Do you aim to create change, which is clearly defining the before and after of what happens with your product or service? Because that change is what people are buying, right? And lastly, do you value trust and attention? Do you practice transparency in your business dealings with customers? Do you respect your audience's time and attention? That's really, really interesting, right? We deliberately keep all of our shows to 45 minutes because it sits within the average commute time. So we're trying to get our product to fit in the lives of our customers. Frankly, you and I drink so much coffee, we could probably do like 45 minutes on each clip, and we do at least four clips. Yeah. Right? So we're trying to be a modern marketer. Seth, help us, Seth.
But you're right, Mike. Each of those is something that we either have underbaked. So for some of us, you know, not obviously the Moonshots podcast excluded here, because I think as we were going through those, Mike, I was thinking, right, tick. We're thinking about this. We're thinking about that. Maybe there's a couple of areas we could do a little bit more on. But I think these steps, these truths, these insights are probably the things that people have deprioritized. You know, I've been in many meetings, as I'm sure you have, where somebody brings out the persona research.
Yeah.
And there'll be 5, 6, maybe 8 characters. And, you know, you spend a good amount of time going through them all. But I think what people miss, perhaps, during that process is just how valuable the insights that went into creating the personas are.
Wait
the
for actual this, Mark.
Research.
Wait data. For this. Here's where I think it gets really worse. Building on what you said, is when the reviews are negative, people don't want to talk about it. But if you listen to Seth, you have to listen to it to understand the gap. You're not solving the problem correctly. People are not that satisfied. You need to change that product or service. The idea of, well, what do we need to change is in those reviews. Often people don't want to, no bad news in this meeting, right?
Yeah, you're totally right. There'll be so much money spent on trying to define or find the problem. Hey, just look at your reviews. Talk to the customers.
Yes.
They'll know best.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes it takes a bit of courage to say, hey, like I actually, you know, I talked to someone today and it was really interesting. They were talking about how they wanted to launch a program in Australia and New Zealand, and they're a global company. And I said to them, I would take a little bit of care in how you go about this, maybe even a bit of extra care, because I'd done my research before the call and I looked at Trustpilot and a couple of people, and it's a big known service. And I said to this very senior person at the company, the sentiment and the reviews around your product in Australia and New Zealand, they're not that good. So you've got a mixed reputation. So anything you do, regardless of your intention, you've got to realize that unlike maybe the US or the UK, you're not held in that higher regard here. So maybe you want to, A, fix the current problems and remember that you're not a 4-star out of 5 operation, at least here. And it was really interesting because, and I full respect, and they're like, you're absolutely right. And they were very candid to own up to that. But it's really interesting for me. That really orientated any new program. I'm like, well, before you go forward with new things, I would be addressing, like, there is a review from 4 days ago and it's 1 star out of 5.
Yeah.
I think you've got something you might need to fix. It's not like it's a disgruntled customer from 3 years ago. But you notice how, like, my whole tendency was like, slow down, you know.
And it's always, and I think that's often a challenge, isn't it? You know, there'll be teams, marketing teams, growth teams that will be orientated around, or even product teams orientated around bringing out the latest, best feature, but not actually necessarily paying attention to those customers.
Yes.
And also, Mike, whose role is it to keep up abreast with all these customer reviews? Is it the marketing team? Should it be, you know, as an insight or data team? I think a lot of businesses lack the accountability, I suppose, is the way of putting it.
Well, it's the rush of the go forward. Progress. Rush. But, you know, like in the end of the day, I think you have to realize that no massive ad spend will ever fix a bad product or service. It'll never fix it.
Yeah, that's true.
So hopefully we're doing something right, because we have tons of people who have not only listened to our show and watched our show, Mark, they crossed the Rubicon, they took their hard-earned dollars and yen and pesos, and they became a member of the Moonshots podcast. And I think everyone is dying for the trumpets. They're like, you're 19 minutes in, Mike. Where the hell are the trumpets? Oh. So over to you, Mark.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm thinking, where's Seth when I need him? You know, he's all about the trumpets, I'm sure. So without further ado, welcome in our annual and modern, our annual as well as more recent modern marketing fans and listeners. Bob, finally, there's the trumpet. Okay, now we're in. Bob, Ken, Dietmar, Marjan, Connor, Rodrigo, Lisa, and Sid, Mr. Bonjour, Paul, Berg, and Kalman, Joe, Christian, Samuela, and Barbara, Andre, Chris, Debbie, and Lassie, Steve, Craig, Daniel, and Andrew, Ravi, Yvette, Karen, and Raul, Nikawada, Ingram, Dirk, and Harry, Venkata, Marco, Jet, Roger, Steph, Gabia, Raw, and Nimelen, all of you guys, annual members, double high fives your way. But hot on those heels are James and Wade, Christoph and Denise, Laura, Smitty, Corey, Gayla, Bertram, Daniela, Mike and Dan, Antonio, Zachary, Austin and Fred, Lorenz, Ola, Andy, Diana, and Margie, our brand new member. Thank you so much, Margie, for joining the Moonshots journey. I can't wait to hear your thoughts and feedback on the show, as well as Mike, the old Moonshot Master Series, which are individuals who herald in the trumpets get unique access to.
Yeah, so thank you again for your support. We really do appreciate it. And if you would love to get access to the Moonshots Master Series, an exclusive podcast for members only, head over to moonshots.io, become a member. It's just the cost of one cup of coffee once a month, and you get access to a whole new world. We invite you into it, just like we want to invite you into this idea of not going big, but starting small, Mark. And this is where we take our next adventure with Seth Godin.
That's right. Let's hear now from Seth and Marie Folio, who are going to talk about and break down marketing strategies that work and really dive into this idea that we've heard once or twice in the show so far, the smallest viable audience.
The answer to just about every question about work is, who can you help? You also have, instead, we begin with a group we hope to serve, a problem they seek to solve, and the change they seek to make. Talk to us about starting with the human, the person first, not necessarily what we want to make or our creations, but this approach.
So I'm going to come in sideways a little bit, because one of the controversial ideas is that we need the smallest viable audience, not the biggest possible audience. And a lot of people have trouble with that. They say, why should I do all this work if I don't want to reach everyone? Well, if you want to reach everyone, that means you've denied the people you're serving their humanity, because you're saying you are the masses, you are average. But if you can pick someone, if you can be specific, the smallest viable group of people, and say, I live or die with you. You are who I am here to serve. And if I can't please you, I didn't do a good enough job. That's different, because that puts you on the hook to see other people for where they want to go. And if that's not where you want to go, well, then they're the wrong people.
Right.
But if no one wants to go where you want to go, then you're not going to achieve what you seek to achieve. So to be honest here, what we have to begin by saying is, who would miss me if I was gone? Who will say to me, thank you for bringing me this? And some skeptical people say, that's impossible. No one wants life insurance, right? And my answer is, so then don't make life insurance. Let someone else do that. You get to pick what you do. Do something worthwhile, because it's going to take blood, sweat, and tears to go to the next level. Figure out who it's for and what it's for, and obsess about that, because we don't do marketing to people. We do it with them. Because they have a choice now. They didn't used to have a choice. But with so many things a click away, they have a choice. And if they're not going to pick you, then you're out of luck.
You said the challenge for most people who seek to make an impact isn't winning over the mass market. It's the micro market. They bend themselves into a pretzel trying to please the anonymous masses before they have 50 or 100 people who would miss them if they're gone. And the line of, if you can't succeed in the small, who do you believe or how do you believe you're going to succeed in the large? I don't think we can say this enough, quite frankly, because when we do an exercise in B-School about ideal customer avatar and I'm having people just imagine for a moment, just a single person, people freak out.
Yep.
They're like, it's so much resistance, but I want to serve everyone. And I feel like this is a slightly different angle. It's like, look, forget about tens of thousands or millions. What about the first 10?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So one of my, I don't remember many of my blog posts because, you know,
yeah,
it happens.
Daily.
But there's one I wrote called First 10. And what I say to people who say, how am I going to get the word out? Is I say, do you know 10 people? Are there 10 people who trust you? Are there 10 people who will try? And everyone says yes. I said, so when you bring your work to them, do they say thank you and move on? Or do they insist on telling other people? Because if they insist on telling other people, you're set. And if they don't, then you need to make better work or find the right 10 people. Those are the only options.
I love it.
You can't buy your way to mass anymore. You used to be able to. It's gone.
Oh, okay. Find your tribe. Now, lots of ideas here, Mark. You can tell I have spent a life of misbehaving and spending some time on Madison Avenue. Okay. Let's go with like the whole thing around advocacy and referral, the first 10 people, right? This is huge because how beautifully simple is it just to focus on 10 people when you're starting as opposed to trying to reach 10 million people? Like just so much easier, so much more efficient, right? And here's the thing, like he spoke of a really big moment early on in your marketing journey, which is upon using the product or service, or even the prototype, would they tell someone about it? Or in the case of what Seth was talking about, will they miss it?
Yeah, I like that.
So you could give a prototype of a product or service, be it physical or digital. And when you say, okay, testing's over, give me back the prototype. And if they're like, no, can I keep this? Or when is this going to be live? Like, I need this. That's a huge, huge signal that you're onto something. And again, I have a feeling most businesses are in this zombie mode where they have very little advocacy. They're sort of shoving out products and services. They're undervaluing on price to keep the wheels going rather than increasing the price because they're doing so well and there's so much advocacy, right?
Yeah.
I have a feeling most companies like skip, like Seth is saying, and they are not doing the simple test of here is the finished product or service. Use it for 30 days and then I'm going to come back and then we're going to get your feedback and then judge, will they miss it if we take it away? I think most products, if you think about it, how many products or services in your personal life are die-for products? I could probably only get to 10 either brands or products at max, but I probably own, heaven knows how many products I own. So you think about it, how many truly reach that level? And if we spent more time becoming unmissable, like essential, then marketing is just going to become so much easier because those 10 already told another 10 who told another 10 who told another 10, right? And we sit all over that and spend millions of dollars marketing a crappy message. Maybe it's all dressed up looking nice, but we never got the advocacy in the beginning.
No. And the problem with, you know, putting a lot of money into a product, not paying attention or including your customers along the way and throwing even more money at the marketing is that a lot of people, they can see through it. You know, take sneakers, you know, you referenced Keo earlier. When I'm thinking of, you know, running shoes, for example, they are only chosen by, I think, a lot of runners nowadays based on reviews. You know, it's not going to be the flashy marketing campaigns from Nike, from ASIC, from Hoka, whatever it might be. Instead, it's going to be mostly based on those personal reviews. What works best for my body shape, the way I run, the way that the route that I'm taking, whatever it might be. all of that is born out of customer experience, customer research, customer feedback, and so on. And you're right. As soon as you add in that angle, hey, well, you've got a choice. It's up to you which product you buy. Suddenly, all those dollars that you spend on a product marketing, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Because there's another guy around the corner doing a product that might be better, might be cheaper, might be easier to get hold of, whatever it is, that he hasn't paid a lot of marketing on. That's going to do better because yes. It suits that customer even greater.
Yes. And Mark, we have reached the magic moment that all our viewers love, which is Mike's going rogue and sharing his screen. Here we go. I'm going to share with you something I have found invaluable to do exactly what Seth has talked about. It's the world's simplest and shortest survey, and it tells you everything you need to know. It's incredible. It's the Net Promoter Score, and you say the following, either verbally or in an email, score 1 to 10, 10 being high, 1 being extremely low. How likely would you be to recommend our product or service to a friend or colleague? And if they score a 9 or a 10 out of 10, they are what we call promoters. They're going to advocate on your behalf. They're going to tell everyone, oh my gosh, these sneakers, these running shoes, this coffee is amazing. You have to try it. If they score you at a 7 to 8, they're what we call passives. They could kind of go either way. But here's the interesting thing. 0 to 6 are detractors. Those people are likely, if they're your existing customers, they're very likely to leave in the next 3 months. But also, there's no chance they'll tell anyone about you. Because when you recommend, you're taking personal risk. Because if I recommend to you a great cafe and you go and have a terrible experience, that somehow washes off on me. So for me, and this is for the viewers here, you'll notice why actually the imbalance here is that to be a promoter, it's only 9 or 10, but detractor is 0 to 6 because we're very reluctant to advocate if we're in doubt of the product or service we're talking about because it reflects on us. So if you achieve this product at Nirvana, if you can hit 9s or 10s, from a product perspective, you need to find out what are you doing to get those 9s and 10s and for whom. And those stories that those people, those customers tell you are the stories you need to tell in your marketing. This is the change. When you do this with our product, you'll experience this benefit. You'll relieve these pains and create these gains. But notice, Mark, only 2 scores get you a promoter. Yet 8 out of 10, they're not promoting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right, Mike. Apart from the sneaker brands you mentioned earlier, Keo, which, by the way, listeners, we are not receiving any ad revenue for. It just happens that we're referring to them. But you're right, Mike. It's very, very rare. I can't actually personally remember the last time I truly was an advocate for a product that I have.
Yes.
You know, obviously, we've referenced softwares like Todoist on the show.
Yep.
But actually, if I look at my personal life and the things that I have in my house right now, I'm not really sure what I would necessarily be a real promoter of. And if there are products, it's going to be 5, maybe.
Exactly.
That I'm going to use all the time.
So, you know, let's do a fun little thing here. If I do the exercise, I can only advocate for 1 fashion brand. It would only be Uniqlo.
Yeah.
Outstanding quality. The products last forever. Modern, clean cuts, timeless cuts, reasonably priced. That's the only brand. Shoe brand, Koyo only. Hoka is close. Hoka is real close. And that's it. Out of all of the brands that I wear.
Isn't that funny?
If I think about all of the health products, I love this product called Aleppo Soap, which is it takes olive oil and the laurel berry, and it's an ancient soap. It comes from Syria like 2,000 years ago. It's amazing. It's called Aleppo Soap. Transformative. It is hyper clean, antibacterial, antifungal. So your skin feels amazing. Like I wash with it, I shave with it, I shampoo with it. It's like one product. It has 2 ingredients in it. It's crazy. Okay. But my point here is, notice this is what a 9 or a 10 looks like, because you can just instantly, intuitively talk to the benefits you experience. Mm-hmm. Now, objectively, when we are in the marketing seat or in the business seat, we have to go find that same energy, that same advocacy, that same promotion from our customers. And we have to be very objective and not like wishful thinker, like, oh, they liked it ish, 6. We averaged 6 out of 10 on our NPS. Yeah. If you're not 7 or above, go back to the drawing board with the product. Don't even bother telling the story. If you can't get those reviews, fix the product first, because you are wasting your money amplifying a product that does not solve a problem.
And again, I think this is quite conflicting to a lot of the behaviors that our brands, that we're all, you know, seeing in our households every day, most likely doing, Mike. You know, we are seeing this prevalence of kind of maybe average brands getting served to us through things like Instagram, social media, et cetera, et cetera. Very, very challenging now to really find the quality of a good product without utilizing those advocacies within the brand's marketing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for me, when I do see those brands out there that do utilize testimonials and so on, I think there's something more authentic straight away, because I realize they're not spending heaps and heaps of dollars with some A-list celebrity that probably was paid. They didn't even know what the product was. It feels very inauthentic.
Hello, versus FTX, right?
Exactly. I know. I wasn't going to drop it, but you're right. Think about how many individuals FTX signed up to sell a product that they probably didn't really understand,
right,
and certainly didn't appreciate the background information within it, you would presume. And that list was enormous, wasn't it, Mike, of A-list individuals?
Some of my heroes, Brady, Steph Curry, they did it.
Yep.
So good on Taylor Swift. She got offered it and she said no thanks. So she's she's one up there. I think, you know, we've kind of structured in the first half of the show, Mark, this idea of inverting traditional practices, starting small, really focus on solving a problem. And if this really appeals to you, we actually did a whole product series, right, including Marty Kagan, who's got a great book called Inspired. So head over to moonshots.io. If you want to really go deep on the product, get the 9, get the 10 out of 10 on the NPS. That's where you're going to find some of the answers. But now we need, Mark, to turn our minds to some practical advice on how the hell we start being a modern marketer.
Yeah, look, we've heard the proposition from Seth. I believe that our listeners and subscribers now understand the value, Mike, that you and I have with regards to good marketing. So let's hear from Rick Kettner. He's going to highlight 5 key steps from Godin's book around specifically productive marketing. And let's hear how we can now work towards effective marketing.
The 5 steps for effective marketing. Much of what is considered marketing today is really just advertising, buying people's attention to sell products and services. And while there's nothing inherently wrong with advertising, in fact, it's a topic we're going to come back to later in this episode, advertising is not marketing. Marketing is about creating change. It's about helping people discover, understand, and share new solutions, whether those are products, services, ideas, or anything new like that. So this book, it outlines a 5-step process for effective marketing. And those steps include, 1, create a thing worth making with a story worth telling and a contribution worth talking about. 2, design and build it in a way that a few people will particularly benefit from and care about. 3, tell a story that matches the built-in narrative and dreams of that tiny group, the smallest viable market. And 4, the step that everybody gets excited about, spread the word. 5, often overlooked, show up regularly, consistently, and generously for years and years to organize and lead and build confidence in the change you seek to make.
I mean, woo.
That was rapid.
We covered a lot of ground in that. I think that it's the order of them, Mark, that's really important, right? I think it becomes very, to start at the end, it becomes very easy to be consistent and regular with your storytelling if you have really solved a problem. Mm. If you're really fighting for that change, if you've listened to the customer, if you've validated that you solved the problem, you share their stories, like that becomes like, I mean, you think about it, how much we like to share amongst ourselves the positive feedback that we get from listeners. We were just actually reviewing some before. This is like fuel for the fire, so it becomes a lot easier. So I think there's a certain flywheel effect of momentum that happens when you apply these. Again, I would say, like, check out the show notes. We'll have a link to a summary and some more details on these five practices, these five steps, checklist, and a whole lot of thinking around this, so you can really study this work from Seth Godin. But Mark, I mean, I think, you know, we have to make sure that we come to perhaps one of the biggest ideas, which is, if you are engaging in a conversation with your customer, it's not always going to be positive. It's going to be a whole mixed bag. And we live this every day on the podcast. We get people saying, oh, we love the breakdowns. And then and the next day you wake up, we hate the long-winded breakdowns. And you're like, oh, what do I do? So, Mark, maybe you've got an idea for us here.
I do, Mike. I do. Well, in fact, actually, Seth Godin has a good idea for us. He has a revolutionary idea that perhaps we haven't necessarily considered before. So let's hear from Seth and Marie once more, closing out our first episode of the Seth Godin series, helping us understand that all critics, yes, that's right, all critics are right.
All critics are right and all critics are wrong. This right. is so vital. Again, I hear this almost weekly. Anytime I go to an event, people ask about it. It's like, well, you know, I'm so scared of having that Instagram comment or that blog comment or that email or that video of someone just trashing my work and saying it's no good. You said the critic who doesn't like your work is correct. The critic who says no one else will like your work is wrong. It's either good or it's not. That is not true.
Right. So anyone who has an opinion, it's true. That's their opinion. They're not trying to win a logic prize. It's just, I don't like that photo. I don't like that baked good. I don't like this, right? Fine. Thanks for letting me know. That might not be my problem. It might be my problem. We'll see in a second. But the critic who says, I've seen this movie. I'm writing in the New York Times. No one will like this movie. That critic is wrong, because that critic can't know what everyone else will like. All they know is what they like. Mm-hmm. And so when someone shows up and says, I hate this, the answer is thank you. Thank you for caring enough to try it. Thank you for caring enough to let me know that I shouldn't bother you again. Thank you for giving me a chance to point you to someone else who will help you so I can earn some trust and repay your trust of me. Thank you. And when someone says, no one should go here, we just need to ignore that person because they're wrong.
And I feel like people forget that the most beloved things, you use the example of Harry Potter and the book that right. what over 21,000 reviews and 12% of them are one star.
One star, the worst book I ever read. Worst book I ever read. Said to the author who made more money as an author than anyone in history, this is the worst book I ever read, really. Yeah.
We need to all remember that. Do you still, and I don't know because I don't plan to, do you still not read reviews on Amazon?
Zero.
Zero. People need to hear it.
In 5 years, I stopped 5 years ago for a couple of reasons. One, I realized I had never met an author who said, I read all my one-star reviews and now I'm a better writer. Okay? That never happened. First of all, you're never going to write this book again. So the feedback on this book doesn't really help you. The book's already done.
Yes.
And secondly, all it does is seize you up and, yes. and make you shut down.
Yes.
So I'm like, well, you have the right to say that, but I don't have the obligation to read it. Thank you for taking the time. But no, I don't want to know.
All critics are right. All critics are wrong. Yeah. I think what he's really calling to attention here is you should always be grateful that people took the time to give feedback, good or bad. That's for sure. And secondly, I think within this idea of critique is the way to handle it, to harden the system a little bit, is they are totally correct when they say this is their opinion. but it does not apply to everyone. So don't get too carried away when a couple of people say, hey, this is great. That's not everyone. And when a couple of people say, hey, this really sucks, okay, don't worry about it too much because that's only them, not everyone. And I think the step that this really calls out is we're not really used to. I mean, if you step back in history and look at the last 50, 100 years of business, there's been very little dialogue truly between brands and their customers. The internet has definitely heralded this new type of conversation. And let's be honest, nobody's figured out because Facebook still has hundreds of people manually reviewing Facebook posts because there's no algorithm for it. And when they do run the algorithm, it starts to get a little bit biased. Yeah. So if Facebook can't figure out these conversations, right? I don't know. I'm just saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's think about this. Like, okay, it's a new type of conversation. You have to take it with a pinch of salt. You got to be a bit like a Teflon. Let it just kind of glide off. Don't get too big in your boots. Don't take it to heart too much because it is only one person's opinion. But I think more importantly, it helps us understand that the modern marketer is ready, knows that this is about conversation, starting small and then scaling out. And that should be the focus of your attention.
I couldn't agree more. I think you've nailed that exactly there, Mike, because you're right. If the dialogue has only just started and we're still in this realm of marketing where brands, services, etc., are slowly figuring out how do they really truly address the dialogue that they have with their customers? Is it through their own social media channels? Is it something else? You know, how long's a piece of string? But similar to what we heard with critical conversations, you know, yes, Mark's harking back to that book.
Hang on, Mark, just so you know, your favorite book is Crucial Conversations.
Crucial Conversations. Let's hope the listeners don't leave any comments regarding that faux pas.
How could they, Mark? They got two sets of trumpets today, so I think everyone's pretty good.
Good. Yeah, yeah. If everyone's happy, then that's fine because all criticism is positive feedback, depending on how you interpret it, isn't it? And that's important. That's what we really heard from there. Whether you're receiving feedback, whether your product is receiving feedback or whether you as an individual are receiving feedback, it's all good. It's ways for us to improve. Obviously, like Seth, yeah, we aren't obsessed with one-star reviews. J.K. Rowling's not going to do it. But I still think, Mike, that there's value for a brand to really be aware of and pay attention to what are those bugbears that customers are saying, you know, whether it's an app that's on our phone, product that you're buying off Amazon, those reviews are intrinsic to whether I'm going to go out and purchase it or take part in it. And it's funny just how buried a lot of those pieces of criticism are. Nobody really wants to address them.
And you know, what we've learned here really, Mark, is if you're trying to solve a problem, you're obviously going to be doing that for a small cohort. And you can apply those five steps and recognize that you're starting a conversation. Each of those 4 points that we heard about today, I mean, even if you take only one or two of those, you are on the course for a much more productive way of thinking about your product and your marketing and engaging customers. Mm. Now that you've had the chance to do the buffet of This Is Marketing from Seth Godin, which one is going to be your main course after the show?
Well, I think the curiosity around the consumers is always an interesting one because of how much data goes into it. I think, Mike, for me, as I consider, you know, the show as well as the other work I've got going on, it's paying attention to who that end customer is. Is the user either providing feedback already that I can learn from? Is there opportunity for me to gather data around those consumers so that I can make better informed maybe points of view or decisions, rather than maybe there's something that I've always wanted to get rid of from my product, maybe it's a feature, but actually you look into the archive of research and data. Hey, customers secretly love it. Don't let my subjective point of view ruin a product because customers actually love it. I think for me, it's all about remembering everyone's in marketing. Let's go out and find their point of view in order to improve and enrich the work that I'm doing. That was a long-winded way, Mike, of me saying, I think it's all about the customers. What about you? What's your homework?
Mark, I think you just said, like, it was the whole book. I tried to ask for for an idea, and you're just like, all of it.
All of it, Mike. That was a cheat way of getting out. Which one for you is standing out, though?
I think the five steps was really important because I think it put things in a certain order. Like, don't go out telling the story if you haven't confirmed if you're solving a problem.
Yeah.
And I think in there lies a huge starting point to kind of, once you focus on that, everything else kind of cascades out of that. So I think that's really powerful.
Love it.
Mark, I want to say thank you to you once again. And I want to say thank you to you, our listeners, our viewers, and of course, our members too. Here today on show 253, we studied the first of many pieces of gold from Seth Godin. This one was, this is marketing. You can't be seen until you learn to see. And that's what we did today. It started with making sure that you're solving a problem, as a modern marketer should do. Making sure you know who you can help. Will they miss what you're doing? And then we put it into a sort of a structure. Five steps for effective marketing. And lastly, we brought it all home with the idea that, hey, you are now in a conversation for good or bad. Get ready to go have a dialogue, a conversation, have a chat with your customer, get to know them, their problems, their dreams, and their hopes. Do this, and you will be the modern marketer. And take these principles, and you will be able to take your business, your project, your team to the next level. You'll be able to take yourself to a new level. You'll be able to be the best version of yourself, and you can do that right here and learn out loud together here on the Moonshots podcast. Okay, that's a wrap.